Welcome to the Polka Dotsy Body Love Podcast, the podcast where we encourage you to eat, move, and think because you love yourself. With your host, Chloe Pedley. Hey, this is Chloe, and welcome to today's episode where I am going to talk about 12 things that we should have learned in sex ed, but quite probably didn't. Now, before I get started, there is a fantastic educational program that is running in some states in Australia. Yay, Victoria, and yay, Northern Territory, and hopefully, hooray, New South Wales, if you can get on with this program as well. It's called the Safe Schools Program, and the Safe Schools Program is a fantastic sex education program that is designed to teach children about their bodies and about their sexuality and sex at an age-appropriate rate. Now, there's a lot of criticism about this program because there are a lot of very uptight types of people who are like, oh, don't tell my daughter she has a vagina, she might use it. And a lot of people who are concerned about teaching their kids about their bodies because they think it's inappropriate for children to know about sex and sexuality. But as someone whose first sexual experiences were actually what I can only call rape, I think it's really important that kids understand about their bodies. And I think it's really important that kids understand about the concepts of consent, of enthusiastic consent, and of healthy sexual relationships before they find themselves in a position where they can get hurt or, worse yet, hurt others. So I have to be honest, I found sex education pretty horrifying and terrifying when I was in high school. As a hormonal 13-year-old teenager who had acquired most of her sexual knowledge from horse breeding books up until that point, I didn't feel particularly comfortable with my teacher telling me about the anatomy or the things that we were meant to expect in sex, and it was confronting. And I think it was the same for many of the people in my class because there was a lot of joking. Not many of us were taking the teachers seriously. There was a lot of quiet snickering. I think a lot of people were so embarrassed by the fact that we were talking about sex, not sex, that we didn't take a great deal in. So high school was great in the fact that it taught us about anatomy. I know more about the male penis and the female vulva than I probably ever needed to know, but you know, it's always knowledge is power, and that's a great thing. It was mostly about mechanics and in applying a condom to a banana or blowing it up like the Goodyear blimp and throwing it around the room. We did learn about the menstrual cycle to a degree. Women have periods approximately every 28 days, which was really fantastic when I finally discovered that my period wasn't coming every 28 days, and I had no idea that, you know, my irregular periods were still within the range of normal, just not every 28 days. Periods can come all over the place, and sometimes they're regular, sometimes they're irregular, sometimes they come every 28 days, sometimes they don't. And the other thing that was really great about sex ed was the horrifying pictures of STDs, or in this case, I prefer STIs, I think is the term that we use, because sexually transmitted infections has less of a shame and negative connotation than diseases. So let's embrace that language, sexually transmitted infections. Again, I think knowledge is power. We should know about STIs. We should know about chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis and all of the things that we can catch and transmit if we're not practicing safer sex. So here are a couple of the things that I think would have been really fantastic and really useful if they had been taught in our high school classrooms or earlier, definitely earlier. Firstly, there's more to sex than penis in vagina, mechanics and biology. So we saw some fantastic animated cartoons of penises being inserted into vaginas, and we watched Where Did I Come From? And we watched cats vigorously twisting their tails together as a euphemism for procreation. However, when it comes to actually having sex, there is more to it than inserting the penis into the vagina. Now, from an age-appropriate perspective, maybe a 10-year-old only needs to know about that, but as you come to actually having sex, it's really important that you understand arousal and pleasure and that penis in vagina sex isn't actually the only way to have sex. So I think it's really important that we examine that it's not just about pumping, thrusting, ejaculating, rolling over, and going to sleep. There are emotional and physiological and psychological aspects of the sexual experience that are just as important as the ins and outs. People have sex for a huge amount of reasons, right? And most of it has very, very little to do with biology. There aren't very many of us who have sex purely for the sake of procreation. Of course, there are certainly those of us who do. But we have it for pleasure, for lust, for anger, for cheating, for revenge, for exploration, out of boredom, for exercise. There's no limit to the reasons that people do have sex. And if we only teach about sex for procreation, we're selling short a whole bunch of hormonally driven teenagers who are doing it just for fun. And we're not giving them the opportunity to build on their education. Further to that, we are telling a whole range of 20, I don't know, 30, maybe 40, 50 something women that the only reason to have sex is to create children, and we can't necessarily have sex just for pleasure. Now, there will be those of you listeners out there who are sort of going, what? That's not me. There cannot possibly be people out there who haven't realized that sex can be just for pleasure. Yeah, there actually are. And there's a lot of them. And there's a lot of shame attached to the feelings of pleasure around sex sometimes. And there are a lot of people who have really, really strong psychological attachments to the shame of having sex. So it's something that does need talking about, like the reasons that we can have sex and some of exploring the healthy reasons to have sex and exploring the unhealthy reasons to have sex and exploring the types of relationships that sex can become a part of. I think it's really, really important that we look into that. And realizing that you don't need a partner to have sex, because masturbation is something that is absolutely valid and fantastic and pleasurable and can be done for any amount of reasons as well. On that note, one of the things that we missed out on in high school sex ed was that sex should, and it should be pleasurable. I don't know why it gets glossed over. Maybe it's because we're all embarrassed. Maybe it's because we're ashamed of our genitals. Maybe it's because we all carry this culturally perpetuated burden that sex is something that should be hidden away, and it's that it's shameful and dirty and nasty and something that we shouldn't talk about. But the more we talk about it, the less shameful it is. The more we talk about it and the more education we have, the better it can be for everyone, the safer everyone can be. Education is knowledge, and knowledge is power, and power is making good life choices. Sex should be pleasurable. And that's when we do need to talk about things like arousal. That's when we do need to, you know, educate boys about what's pleasurable for them and tell them that there's more than one way to achieve orgasm, and educate young women about the anatomy of their vulva. Get them to experiment with their bodies. Get them to play with their bodies, because once you know what feels good for you, you can teach your partners what feels good. And, you know, recognizing that not all sex occurs between your pants. Under your pants, there are so many pleasurable erogenous zones on the body that can be explored, and it's really fun exploring. So sex should be pleasurable. And if it's not pleasurable, you need to be able to comfortably communicate, because otherwise you go on faking orgasms. And most women I know are fantastic at faking an orgasm, but terrible at communicating what feels good for them. And again, I know there will be some of my listeners who are going, gasp! Do you mean to say that there are women out there who don't know how to tell their partners how to get them off? And I'm sorry to tell you, but yes, we get questions through the Polka Dotsy inbox all the time from people who are anorgasmic, from people who, that means they've never had an orgasm or can't achieve orgasm, from people who don't know if they've had an orgasm, and from people who don't know how to tell their partners how to pleasure them. So let's make it part of our basic education, especially as adults. Sex should be pleasurable. Let's set that expectation. It's not a high expectation. It should be the lowest standard of expectation. Sex should be pleasurable for both partners. Moving on, and this is a bugbear of mine, because at Polka Dotsy, I have personal opinions about pornography. Now, here they are, and they're controversial. So let's play with this, and please feel free to send me your opinions and send me your feelings, because I think it's really important we have discussions about this stuff. I think porn can be absolutely fantastic. I think it can be one of those things that we can learn from, we can enjoy, it can be pleasurable. I think there are major things that are wrong with the industry. I think the filmmakers should be paid well. I think the actors should be safe, paid well, and respected. And I think that the industry does have a bit of a reputation. Okay, so that's downplaying it. The industry has a reputation of exploiting porn actors, and there's a high suicide rate. There's a high rate of abuse and exploitation. And I think it's one of those industries that, on account of being about selling sex and objectifying bodies, particularly women's bodies, and displaying graphic, sometimes very violent subjects and content, it can be very diminishing and degrading for women. That being said, there are excellent filmmakers out there who make what I call ethical or feminist porn, and it's depicting real pleasure. It's depicting actual couples who are having normal sex, not gangbang rapey stuff. And it's paying the actors and the filmmakers really well for the content that they produce. And I think that's the type of pornography that I can get behind, and I think that's fantastic. I think it's also really important that we notice the difference between fantasy and reality. And that's what's not being presented in an educational way to young adults or teenagers who are coming into sexual activity. They think that the rapey, violent, horrendous porn is actually normal. So young teen girls are being propositioned to perform anal sex as normal sex, and there's no focus on their pleasure, there's no focus on their orgasms, there's no focus on consent, there's no focus on healthy romantic relationships that extend beyond blowjobs and cream pies. And I mean, I think that's really sad. Because when that type of sex is presented as normal, it diminishes the whole spectrum and range of healthy, pleasurable, consenting sexual activity that, you know, two consenting adults can engage in. And I think that there's scope and space for porn within that. But we need to have these discussions, and we need to be talking to our newly sexually active teenagers and sometimes pre-teenagers about the messages that they're being sent in the media and what's normal and what's healthy. And we need to have these discussions about consent. We need to explain to them what rape is. We need to explain to them what violence is, and encourage platonic relationships as well outside of these hormone-driven sexual activities. So, yeah, porn is not a reliable indicator of what sex will be like. Most women in porn are faking their orgasms as well, and a lot of the activities that look good on camera don't necessarily translate into real life. So, unfortunately, what looks like pleasure on film isn't necessarily pleasure. Sexual orientation. Now, this is one of the things that I'm really super stoked about the Safe Schools program teaching children and teaching young adults about, because as a 30-something woman, it's only recent that I have been exposed to the world of the LGBTIQ plus community, which sounds really sad, actually. The thing is, when I was going through high school, and this isn't that long ago, I went through high school from the years of 1997 through to 2001. I graduated in 2001. And the idea of being gay or bisexual or queer was something that, I mean, I personally, and I identify as a bisexual woman, was something that was so shameful and hushed that we never spoke about it. And I'm sure there were kids in my classes that were gay or bi or queer or however it was they identified, but had no space or opportunity to actually talk about their feelings or talk about their sexuality. And if they did, they were mocked and shamed and bullied and worse. And I think it's really important that we do talk about sexual orientation and we look at it as a spectrum, because that's what it is. No one person necessarily fits into all of the boxes. And given that there are 7 billion people on this world that we all share, there's a fair chance that there are 7 billion different ways to experience the world. And it's really important that we are inclusive and open to everybody's experiences, because who am I to tell you what's right and what's wrong? And who are you to tell me? So you never know where you're going to end up. Sometimes you might find yourself attracted to people of the same sex. Sometimes it might be sexy and it doesn't matter. And sometimes you might feel asexual and not feel sexual at all. So gender is a spectrum, and where you're at is perfectly normal and perfectly okay. If you're feeling at odds with it and if you need to explore this and talk to somebody about this, then there are fantastic therapists and resources and organizations that are welcoming and inclusive and can help you explore your sexuality and embrace it and accept it and find communities where you are embraced and accepted and you deserve to be. So that's one of the things that I think is really great about kids today, because they're actually being taught this, and we're raising a generation that is far more accepting and inclusive than even what I experienced 15 years ago. So virginity. What even is virginity? Like, obviously, you know, having sex for the first time, but you're no longer a virgin. But Why do you lose this virginity? It's not like you take it out and place it by the bedside table, and then when you finish doing the deed, oh my goodness, my virginity, it's wandered away. Where could it possibly be? I've lost my virginity. Has anyone seen it? I didn't come out from my first sexual experience asking my family, have you seen my virginity? I seem to have misplaced it. This goddamn virginity. It's wandered off. What a naughty virginity. But we do attach a lot of value to virgins. And I mean, I think that's silly, for one. Like, you know, it's just the first time you have sex, right? And like most of us at some point in our lives, we're going to have sex. It's normal human behavior. The other thing that I've noticed is that your virginity also translates to being very, very inexperienced. So it's not necessarily one of these things that, I don't know, there's no value attributed to it. Like once it's gone, it's not like you've lost something of yourself. If anything, you've gained experience, and experience is a wonderful thing, and it can be a wonderful thing. But it's not something that is checkable, because we know that a woman's hymen or a female's hymen, and I say female just because of the anatomy, isn't something that's a reliable indicator of virginity. Females are born without hymen, some, you know, break it by riding a bike or playing a rough sport, and some maintain it even though they've had healthy sexual relationships with lots of penis and vagina interaction. Having no hymen doesn't mean that you're not a virgin, and not being a virgin doesn't make you any less valuable as a person or a woman. And that's the thing, like this concept that having a high sex drive is something that makes you immoral is absolutely ridiculous. Like, not wanting to have sex doesn't make you any more moral. It doesn't make you frigid. It doesn't make you less valuable. It doesn't make you more valuable. It's just you have a lower sex drive. Haha, there we go. That's all it is. Having a higher sex drive. Wow, you have a higher sex drive. Haha, that's what it is. It's not abnormal. Like everything else, there's a spectrum that like your sex drive can fit into. And depending on what's going on in your life, be it stress, be it, you know, hormones, whatever it is, be it illness, be it when things are going fantastically, your sex drive might fluctuate through that. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. Your sex drive is not attributed to your value. And that's where the discussion about sex really does come into the Polka Dotsy Body Love podcast, because we're talking about thinking because we love ourselves and really examining the things that make us up and make us human. So sex is a big part of human activity and human existence, and it's also a big part of body positivity, because we attribute so much value to how fuckable we are and how valuable we are in society based on sex. Sex sells. Sex is it's one of those things that we just can't escape. So not wanting to have sex doesn't make you frigid or normal. Having a super high sex drive doesn't make you morally loose. It's not a reflection of your worth as a person. The great thing about sex is it's a skill. And playing with your own body and exploring your own body means that it's a skill that practice makes perfect. Learning how to get yourself off and learning what works really well for you, experimenting with your partners and communicating with them and listening to what works for them, practice makes perfect, and practice makes fantastic lovers eventually. As long as you communicate and you work within a scope that's healthy and consensual, it's fantastic. Also, I think one of the things that we really miss out on is that sex is meant to be fun. It's not something that we have to take seriously. So many couples argue over their sex lives, and that's sad, right? It's really sad. I mean, sex is a great part of coupledom and it's a great part of a relationship. It doesn't have to be part of a relationship. It can just be sex, whatever. But when we start placing a lot of value on it, and when we start monitoring the quality of our relationship based on sex, and I'm guilty of this myself, it has a bigger impact than it ever should have. And that being said, if it is something that's impacting on your relationship, there are amazing therapists that offer sex therapy and couples counseling, and you can explore in a safe environment the issues that are affecting your sex life and your sex relationship. It's serious business, and it's important that you look after yourself and practice safer sex. Condoms are fantastic for this, but you should also be having fun. It's one of those things that it should be fun and pleasurable, and you know, it's not all happy joy rainbows and Kama Sutra poses. Sometimes sex is messy and sticky and kind of gross and embarrassing, and occasionally there are funny noises that come out of bodily orifices that you wouldn't think could actually make a noise, but when there's air and vibration, you might find that your period interrupts things. You might find that there are some interesting post-coital cleanups, but you know what? That's sex, and that's humans, and it can be messy and wonderful and ugly and dirty and all of those things. I personally think that the more we talk about it, the more we explore it, the more we add knowledge to the sexual experience, the better we're all going to be for it. And my big thing is teaching about consent and enthusiastic consent, because quite frankly, consensual human relationships are fun and fantastic, and they add to our lives. That's what it is. Life can be so pleasurable and life can be sweet. So what do you wish you learned in sex ed? What do you wish you had known before you jumped into this wonderful coital relationship of penises, vaginas, and all of the things in between? Please reach out to me and tell me. I love getting your inboxes. I'm Chloe Pedley from the Polka Dots Your Body Love podcast. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and reach out to us. Bye for now.